It stands in metallic silence, impassive to 90 years of the commercial and residential growth that surrounds it. The statue, like the person it honors, remains difficult, almost hazardous to approach, its access constrained by two major District of Columbia arteries. Much like the man, the memorial rests on an island awash in a sea of confusion, aloof and distant from most other prominent Civil War statuary. Curiously, it adorns no rotary circle, graces no park or mall, commands no conspicuous city square, as more or less heralded contemporaries do. Had not generations of urban sprawl engulfed it, the statue would go unnoticed. Tourists, providing they are alert, will stumble across it as they emerge from their hotel lairs for a day's sightseeing in the nation's capital. Its peculiar location reinforces the ambiguity besetting the one who created and first led the Army of the Potomac. And, in a final touch of irony, the statue is flanked by such an irregular grid of street construction as to give rise to the amusing, if not judgmental, chestnut that the general was provided with three avenues of retreat, but only one for advance. Fittingly, both the statue and the man, George Brinton McClellan, strike an enigmatic pose. In sharp contrast to the McClellan Memorial are those to his brother officers, Ulysses S. Grant and William T. Sherman. In the District of Columbia alone, streets, avenues, and rotary circles pay homage to their memories. Their statues dwarf all other Civil War memorials, both in size and prominence of location. Grant's is an imposing statue, graced by splendidly animated horse-drawn artillery, and is located at the east end of the reflecting pool at the base of the Capitol building itself. Located in East Executive Park, Sherman's statue is parked immediately behind the United States Treasury building, fronting the ellipse, and flanked by the White House. The respect paid to their memories is not confined to the District of Columbia. Perched above a stretch along the Hudson River in New York City, Grant's tomb, a most impressive structure, houses the general's remains. Sherman, no doubt, would have had a similar edifice to his memory, except that he specifically ruled it out. While his understated burial rituals were respected, neither he nor Grant, had he wished, could constrain generations of urban and rural officialdom from dedicating scores of expansive parkland, town squares, libraries, and other fitting testimonials in their honor. If for no other reason, Grant is remembered in countless fiduciary transactions conducted on a daily basis. Although initially a seldom used issue of currency, his stamped facsimile, printed on the $50 bill of legal tender, is increasingly being lifted out of American wallets and pocketbooks. Grant and Sherman stand head and shoulders above all of their Union commanders, casting a near impenetrable shadow over them. On the other hand, one finds little to dispel the riddle posed by McClellan's memorial in the historiography of the Civil War era. Early McClellan biographies are generally so tainted with either panegyric or vitriol that they have become useless in arriving at any sober and objective assessment of the man. In them, McClellan is alternately vilified as traitor and coward by some, or hailed as patriot and genius by others. The polemical nature of these works detracts from even the useful biographical information that might otherwise be gleaned from them. At any rate, by the Second World War, these arguments had exhausted themselves, and a new generation of historians were prepared to debate his place within the broad parameters of the Civil War itself. Scholarship in the second half of the 20th century, focusing on McClellan and his contemporaries, Ulysses S. Grant, William T. Sherman, and even Abraham Lincoln, has tended to sweep McClellan into the background. In suppressing the controversy surrounding McClellan, Unionist historians of this period have forged a characteristic figure of the man. In finding McClellan's military career to be essentially an unsuccessful one, they have tended to agree with T. Harry Williams's verdict that McClellan was not a good general, was even a bad one. Bruce Catton found him to have all of the virtues necessary in war except one. He did not like to fight. Kenneth P. Williams blandly dismissed McClellan as the antithesis of a military leader by refusing to consider him a real general. And while his judgment of McClellan as a vain and unstable man who sat a horse well contains some basis in reality, Williams distorts McClellan's active military ambitions in claiming he wanted to be president. McClellan remains the problem child of the Civil War because his military performance still invites debate, although less now than at the beginning of this historiographical period.